This week on America Interrupted from the PBS NewsHour, an inside look at police unions, how they became so powerful.
They're only powerful because we allow them to be powerful politically.
And how they could help or hurt police reform.
The unions, they have to come on board. They don't want change, but we have to change with the times.
Listen and subscribe to America Interrupted wherever you get your podcasts.
And now we turn to the analysis of Brooks and Capehart. That is New York Times columnist David Brooks and Washington Post columnist Jonathan Capehart. Mark Shields is away. So I had planned to start out by asking you both about presidential leadership and COVID, but listening to that conversation right now between Amna and Kevin Blackstone, I have to ask you both quickly, David, what do you make of the fact that the Washington Redskins are now seriously looking at changing their name?
Well, I think they should. I think there's a greater awareness of names. There was a study done, I think, in 2016. They asked Native Americans, are you offended by the name? And 90% said no. But that's shifting. In the most recent study, there was a Berkeley study that said many, many more are offended. And if people are offended by a name, especially if it's about their own people, then it's clear it's wrong to use that name.
And Jonathan Capehart.
It's long past time for the Washington football team to change its name. This is a long time in coming.
And we will see what happens, but clearly forces are in motion. So let's come back to the COVID-19. David, 2 days in a row, the most cases in a single day ever. We are setting record after record. President Trump has had a controversial set of decisions that he's made today, heading to Mount Rushmore. What is your assessment at this point of the leadership from the very top on this pandemic?
Well, Trump has been a failure at it since day one. He's denied it. He's had crackpot theories about it. He's offered no leadership at all. But I have to say, when you look at 57,000 new cases one day, 55,000 the day before, that's not only President Trump. It wasn't Trump who went to the bars in Nevada and Arizona and Texas and California. That's a country giving up. That's a collective failure. That's a country that just got tired and decided, we're just going to go out. And the result is a social breakdown and a humiliation for the country. We had one job as a country this year. And that was to bend the curve on COVID. And that is a job that most European nations, many other nations did. And we failed at it. And now we're in some sort of exponential growth where the curves are rising as fast as they were in March. And that's on Donald Trump for sure. And I don't take it away from him. But that's on a lot of us. It was a collective failure.
Jonathan, Capehart, where do you see the responsibility lying here?
Well, look, I agree with David that the president has been a complete failure when it comes to the COVID response. And I also agree with David that, you know, it's not just the president, it's the people going to the bars, the people going to the beaches, the people going to pool parties and house parties. But we have to remember, though, that people look to leadership. They look to the president for leadership. And what we've seen over the last few months is a parallel universe that's been set up where the president happy talks the nation about the virus going away and disappearing in the heat and injecting people with detergent and disinfectants. And then you have doctors Birx and Fauci desperately trying to get facts and information out to the American people and not being able to break through because the president of the United States will not model the behavior that would filter down to everyone to send the clear signal that this pandemic is serious and here's what I'm doing that is part of the effort to slow it down. If he had done that from the very beginning, washed his hands, put on a mask, not call it a hoax, and make up all sorts of racist names for it, but if he had just shown that kind of symbolic leadership, I doubt we would be in this situation that we're in right now.
What about that, David? I mean, the uncertain trumpet, and we know different governors have done different things. We heard from two mayors a little bit earlier in the program. I mean, the leadership overall has been setting an example. At the same time, followers have been deciding what to do.
Well, we've had failures on all sorts of scales. The CDC messed up the first test. The FDA didn't allow private testing. We've had just institutional failure after institutional failure. Then I do think we have had social failure. You know, I had hopes early in this pandemic that we would draw together as a people, that this crisis would cause us to come together. I don't really have hopes of that anymore. If you look at America, in America, we understand what position we're in right now. 71% of Americans are angry about where the country is. 66% are fearful. 82% are dissatisfied. I think we all understand that this is just an awful moment. It's July 4th, but it's an awful, humiliating moment for the country. And it starts with Trump. I had hopes that, you know, okay, we don't have a leader, but we can decentralize, do the right thing. But it turned us each into our own individual epidemiologist, and we're all trying to make decisions individually without any collective decision making from a leadership class. That's huge on Donald Trump. It's also huge on a country that has come to disrespect expertise and authority. So I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a bad moment and there's a lot of blame to go around.
Jonathan, what about that? And then you have Joe Biden saying what he's been saying essentially this week, accusing the president of surrendering to the COVID.
Well, I would say to piggyback on something David just said, look, you have a governor like Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan who was trying to do the right thing, but yet was getting incoming from the president of the United States, hurling insults at her and demanding that and supporting the people who were protesting armed on the steps of the Capitol in Michigan, trying to get her to change her mind in doing the right thing. So that's also part of the mix. And I think what former Vice President Biden has been doing since the pandemic happened, and especially his remarks this week, is setting up a contrast, a very visible and unmistakable contrast from his strong words against the president to his wearing of a mask to having reporters and spectators socially distanced around him. He is sending the signal that he takes this pandemic seriously, and he has his actions and the symbolism match the words that he's saying. And that's why I think, in addition to the failure that the president has shown, that's why I also think that there's the yawning gap, it appears, in the polling between the president and the former vice president. Because at this moment, at this time in the country where the nation feels either humiliated or down or feel like everything is going off the rails, here's a person who's running to be president of the United States who, at a minimum, is projecting stability.
David, what is your take on Joe Biden's message right now?
I think it's been clear. I think it's been good. It's not been loud, but it doesn't need to be. People can see Donald Trump. I think Biden is running, frankly, a very successful campaign. You know, we look at these things by the polls, and he's doing very well. But I do think it's still mostly anti-Trump. If you look at where Trump's lost support, first he lost it massively among seniors because of his poor handling of COVID, and then his horrible handling of all race relations, anything race-related, more than horrible. He's lost it among many groups, among young, among people who like the way he handles the economy, are disgusted by his behavior on race. And so he's lost another chunk of voters on that. And Joe Biden just has to say, hey, I believe in science. I believe in the Enlightenment. You know, this is not a high bar that he has to pass because of the competition, but I think he's clearing it with ease.
Well, speaking of losing chunks of voters, when it comes to Republicans, we've seen the so-called Lincoln Project. They've been around for several months now, Jonathan, and then just in the last few days, we've been watching alumni of the George W. Bush administration, another group of Republicans, coming together to oppose the president, trying to come up with a message. What is going on here? What has triggered this, and is it effective, do you think?
Well, I do think it's effective, because what you have happening here is a group of Republicans talking to Republicans, trying to convince those who might still be on the fence to turn away from the president. Make no mistake, the Bush 43 alumni who have come out against President Trump, the Lincoln Project folks, these are not Democrats. They are not switching their party affiliations. I'm sure most of them, if not all of them, respect former Vice President Biden as a person, as a statesman, but they're not going to be changing their party affiliation. What we're seeing is some consistency here. Those Republicans are the ones who have constantly talked about rule of law, respect for the Constitution, The powers of the executive, there being some limitations on it, and standing up for the rule of law and democracy. And those are all the things that President Trump has been thumbing his nose at for the entirety of his presidency. And so what I view is happening is a group of stalwart Republicans, tried and true Republicans, who are standing up for the office of the presidency and for the republic, and doing everything they can to communicate to the nation, but especially to Republicans, that what's happening now cannot stand and that the country needs to go in a new direction. And the way to do that is to remove President Trump from office.
But David, can that be effective if it's built on an anti-Trump message? To get back to what you said a moment ago, it's not a pro-Biden message, it's an anti-Donald Trump message.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people that's enough for right now. I mean, people like Biden, I think, will see his agenda, but right now that seems to be enough. I had a lunch with a Republican senator a couple of years ago now, and he was up in 2016. He said, what was interesting about my rallies in 2016 is I didn't know any of these people, that they were not the Republicans I'd known in my state all my life. There was a new group that came in and took over. It was a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. And the people in the Jefferson Project, the people in the Bush campaign, are conservatives. Trump is not a conservative, he's an anti-leftist. And there's a difference. And so if you're a Bush person, say, and a lot of the Jefferson Project people are McCain people, you served a man of character, you sort of believe in America's expansive role in the world, you believe in immigration. What the Trump Party offers you is neither character nor good policy. And so for a lot of people, I'm surprised it's taken them this long. This is a clear choice that they need a change, and they're willing to give up on judges and some of the other issues they care about just for the moral health of the country.
Well, it's a remarkable turn of events. So much to talk to both of you about. We hope you have a great 4th of July weekend in the midst of this terrible time of pandemic and so much more. David Brooks, Jonathan Capehart, we thank you both.